You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Drek this Well, here we are again, Davis Flyers. It's the Trek This Out Davis Flyer podcast on Star Trek Prodigy. Welcome aboard, everyone. Should we all say hello?
Hello.
Hello.
And let's go around the table, like it's the conference room on the Enterprise D. Who wants to be Picard? Oh, I will then.
You say so.
Maybe we should start to my left.
Oh. I'm Evie. I'm the youngest daughter of the Davis family.
Very good, very good. Next.
I'm Sarah, and I'm the person who's actually in charge.
Yeah, that's right.
Very good, number one.
I'm Izzy, and I'm the most awesome Davis. Mm. That's the truth.
And I am Stephen Davis, father of the family, and I shall do this entire podcast in my Picard voice.
I don't think you will.
No? I don't think the world needs that. No? No laugh, no.
Okay. Well, it's just me then. Hi. And we've just watched Prodigy Season 1, Episode 17.
Yeah. Ghost in the Machine.
Yeah, okay. Do you recognise that title from anything?
No. Probably Next Generation.
No, I don't think it's a Star Trek-y thing. It's like a wider known saying. I think it's something to do with the earliest days of computing, when programmers would say there were ghosts in the machine, like gremlins, I suppose.
Mm. Okay, interesting.
I think there was an X-Files. And I think there was an X-Files episode called Ghost in the Machine as well.
That's cool. Okay,
so a little homage.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
Homage,
if you will. Oui, très bien.
Oui.
So, Izzy, did you like this episode?
I did.
Why did you like this episode?
Are we not going to do an episode run-through first?
We can do that if you want. You want to do an episode run-through?
Yeah.
Okay, Izzy, do an episode run-through for us.
Okay, so in this episode, we see the crew start off, and they're trying to work out a way to get out of the neutral zone and let the Dauntless know that they have this virus on board, basically.
Yep.
And everyone's a bit sad, you know, because Gwyn's like, maybe we shouldn't get back to Starfleet. Maybe we should just give up.
Yeah.
And then they eat ice cream. But then some weird stuff happens. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, a few characters from their separate hologram programs are appearing on the ship.
Wow. How does that happen?
Well, it turns out there's been a glitch in the system.
A ghost in the machine.
A ghost in the machine. And they're actually starting off at Zero's sleuth detective program.
Yeah.
And they must find the skeleton key. Mm. But it becomes apparent very quickly that all of their programs are merging into one.
Yep.
And they work out that out the program, because all the safety settings have been turned off.
Yep.
They have to find the skeleton key. Yep.
It's a holodeck episode. We love holodeck episodes.
Do we
love holodeck episodes? What holodeck episodes of Star Trek do we remember? Just to...
the Voyager ones.
Yeah, go on.
Like what? Those ones, like on Paris's little thing with the
his
pool table.
French cafe. Thing.
Yeah, his French cafe.
Vic's.
Vic Fontaine.
Saving Vic, yeah. My favourite, actually.
You've got the Moriarty episode.
Yeah.
There's another one in Voyager. There's like a little village.
Oh.
Yeah, where the Hirogen do their fighting.
No, that's the war one.
That's the war episode.
Fairhaven.
Fairhaven.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yes. And then obviously you've got the baseball.
Yeah, Take Me Out to the Holosuite. Yeah.
Literally like my favourite episode.
I am surprised that holodecks are like allowed on starships.
Badgie,
yeah, right. So you've just got this like apparently lethal thing that always goes wrong, and it's continually allowed.
It went wrong in Lower Decks as well.
Always goes wrong.
Wait,
that's part of the fun, isn't it?
I just Dahl has like a his like holodeck thing as a ship, and he's a captain of like a pirate ship. Yeah. Isn't like Picard in one of the movies?
Yeah. That's so true. If someone something's happened, isn't it when Worf gets promoted?
Promotion. Yeah.
It's in Generations.
And then he finds out that his family's dead.
His nephew and brother. Yeah.
That was a bit orcs, isn't it?
Mm. I have a confession to make.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of holodeck episodes.
Wow. You're not actually welcome here. Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, they're fine and all, but yeah, I just could never get past the idea that they're like even allowed to consider. All we have to do is go, yeah, turn off the safety protocols. And it's like, yeah, okay, great. I mean, what?
No, I think your problem is they don't do anything to the plot. Apart from in this one, they kind of did.
Actually, so I think that is true. A lot of them tend to be standalone episodes, whereas this did turn out to be quite integral to the plot.
Yeah.
So could they have told that story and moved the story along in a different way?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how else would they have done that?
Mm.
Didn't actually explain what happened.
Being put into stasis or what else could Janeway have done? But then they wouldn't have been able to get out.
Yeah, that's true.
Can I tell you something else that bothers me about holodecks?
What?
How do you decide who gets to use them? If there's like I mean, I don't know the numbers.
You put them on the swimming pool.
Well, yeah, but there's like 1,000 people on the Enterprise D, and as far as I can work out, like 3 or 4 holodecks. So surely they'd just always be being used, and it'd take months to get a space on one.
Nah, I reckon it's like parking spaces. The higher up you are, you get reserved.
Well, I have a problem with that.
I reckon at Ensign, you get one holodeck every month.
Yeah,
for like an hour.
Yeah.
And then as you go out, like Picard, he can kick out that Ensign if he really wants to.
I know, right?
Go and hang out with Sherlock Holmes or
No, that's not him. What
Data
hangs out
with
Dixon Hill.
Oh, that's it, Dixon Hill.
Well, anyway, so there's lots of problems with holodecks. What was your other problem? Sorry, Sarah. With the holodeck.
You were the one having problems.
You were saying how would you remove the plot?
Yeah, I was asking how else do you think it would have moved the plot on?
Yeah. Okay. So what was the plot that needed moving on?
We find out that Janeway has been taken over
corrupted.
By the device. That's the word. Corrupted by the device. And she's the one. Yeah, there we go. Mm. That locked them in the holosuite to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then she uses Dahl's, what's it called? Codes.
Command codes.
I did think that was a bit silly.
Yeah.
So at that point, I became deeply suspicious.
Mm.
Deeply suspicious.
Mm.
Anyway, and she's taken them to the Dauntless. Except it's not really Janeway, guys, don't worry.
Why does Janeway need his command codes anyway?
No, she was saying her command codes weren't working.
Right.
And so she was, and they were about to die because they were being beaten up.
Because the thing had taken over Janeway and it didn't know.
But how did Dahl get his command codes to begin with?
If not from her.
Yeah.
Maybe she has like an auto delete thing as soon as she gave them, like, you know, like how you have to verify who you are in emails, and then it, like, maybe something a bit like that, like she was like, select all the dogs.
Forgot it. Tick all the squares with the traffic light
in
them.
Yeah. Okay, traffic light Janeway,
the one that annoys me the most, write out all the letters
going off on one,
like, you know what I mean. Oh.
Yeah, okay.
I really like the idea of the Morse code, though.
Okay, here's another thing. Why haven't they thought of something like that before now and done that?
Or like one of them going off out in a in a spacesuit.
Yeah.
Shoot them. No, they wouldn't, though, because Janeway's like, they're just kids.
Yeah.
She's worked it out.
Yeah.
Also, wasn't Janeway like knocked out on the floor in the grips of danger in the last episode?
Yes.
Yeah, they just paused that one.
They're like,
So we've got a double point. Is this one of those things that have been happening concurrently? So this will meet the Dauntless. They meet the Dauntless while
Janeway's out. Yeah.
Like, in other news.
Well, so we should probably apologise here for the large gaps between our last couple of podcasts as well, right? So we left.
We're still a bit behind, aren't we?
Yeah, because it's just been Christmas.
Woo-hoo!
Happy Christmas, everybody. And we've been away.
Prior to that, everyone was ill.
Yeah, it's been a tough few weeks.
Illness has struck the Davis Fire, guys.
Yeah.
Kind of mutant bug. I don't know.
Yeah, we needed some hyperspray of something, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Man, are we meant to believe that they've defeated the common cold?
Yeah, I think we are. Actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Sign me up. Okay. I'm in Starfleet.
Okay. Good. Right, okay, characters. Let's refocus. Evie's gone off the boil now because we've lost focus on the episode. Evie, tell us about which characters you liked in this episode.
I like how Murph just keeps surprising us with all his talents.
Good.
Yeah.
Do you think he was singing or lip syncing?
I'd like to believe he was singing. You know how there's some people who like stutter when they talk, but then when they're singing they're fine. Like he's one of those. But like he doesn't talk, but then he can sing, you know?
Yeah. Okay, cool. So Murph was your favourite character in this episode?
Always.
Right. Is?
Zero.
Because?
I don't know, they're just kind of smart, aren't they?
Yeah.
Also, they're just really smart.
And it's Angus Imrie, who we all love.
Yeah, we do love Angus. Yeah.
We saw The Kid Who Would Be King the other day.
We finished it on, it's on...
And he was really good in that. I know he listens. Hi, Angus.
Hey, Angus.
We loved you. Love your work.
There's actually pretty, and whoa, that's like a total Star Trek Kid Who Would Be King crossover.
Right? Yeah,
because he literally played Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's crazy, man. What a small world. What a small world.
Yep. Good stuff. All right, Sarah, your favorite character in terms of developing this episode?
I think actually I'd go Zero as well. Mm. I just really like the fact that Zero's really into escape rooms.
Mm-hmm. The whole episode was escape room, right?
Yeah. Really like that. I felt like because actually because they're inquisitive, they're trying to learn all the time. So actually, that would make sense, isn't it?
Yeah.
Solving problems and mysteries and getting to the bottom of things. I thought that was quite fitting. Mm.
Good. I liked the fact that Jankum essentially plays Street Fighter 2 on the holodeck. He did like a Shoryuken thing, didn't he?
So I don't want to look, or I will look ignorant, there's no way around it. I know Tellarites are verbally aggressive.
Yeah.
Are they known for being physically so as well?
I don't think so. We don't see much of Tellarites, do we?
The same Tellarite who called him like that whole runt and how he was small and how he was a bad.
Well done, Evie. Yes. So he's like particularly that person he had issues with. Okay, that makes sense.
But I don't think we've seen many Tellarite sort of cultural things in the past.
No.
We see them individually.
It felt quite Klingon.
Yeah.
I think what the show was trying to teach kids is that
themes. Yeah, go.
Sorry, because he was saying sometimes I just need to blow off steam, like that. You know,
go beat up a load of classmates. Yeah,
you know. But I think what it was saying is in like a safe environment, you sometimes do just need to like scream into a pillow or that kind of thing, or turn all the lights off and let the darkness take you. Listen to jazz.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I liked all that. That was good. Okay. Maybe I did like this holodeck episode. I don't know. I don't. It seems a bit of a cheat as a storytelling device.
Which is why I asked at the very beginning, like, how else would we have liked them to have told this story? Any ideas?
I like the idea of Janeway taking over the ship and sending it catapulting into a planet or something, and they've only got 24 minutes to decode the puzzle of how to like. Stop her being corrupted. I like that idea better. Real jeopardy. Because there's never any... That's why they have to turn the safety protocols off. Because otherwise there's never any real danger of being on the holodeck.
I'm just saying, right? Do you just not like holodeck episodes? Because there have been a few holodeck episodes. Quite a few now. Like, as soon as Mum saw it was a holodeck episode, she was like, woo, holodeck episode! Mm. Like, as, like... Trek fans, is it just something like we like once in a while?
No, I didn't say ooh, holodeck episode. I said ooh, it's next gen.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
I just feel like the use of the holodeck is a little bit, I don't know, deus ex machina. Do you know what I mean?
Actually, I do.
Do you know what that means?
Deus?
Yeah, how's your Latin?
Is that something to do with God?
Good, yes. Yeah.
God est is...
E-X.
Oh, in.
Mm.
Out.
From.
That's A, yeah. No, that's just E.
God incarnate.
Machina.
Macarena.
Machine.
Machine, yeah. Literally. Hey, okay, I'm going to teach you something. Buckle up, everyone.
Machine from God.
God from the machine. So in the old days, and by old days, like ancient Greek times, right, they would have all the heroes running around. What happens in all those ancient Greek stories? Who comes and creates and the gods, right, come and solve the problems? So what they would literally do is they'd create this like impossible situation that the people had to overcome. They couldn't do it. And then right at the end of the story, they would swing in a god from the machine. So like they would have like a little like swing or what's the word I'm looking for, the lever that you come in, like a trebuchet almost, and they would swing them round, and then, you know, Zeus would appear lowered down going, "Hello, I am Zeus, I will fix whatever problem you've got." So it's literally God coming in from the machine, the lever machine that would bring them in.
So for our listeners at home, Steve is now waving his arms around.
Good radio, that gesticulating one.
Gesticulating what he's talking about.
Wow, Dad, that was really interesting.
When I was in primary school, we had a Greek day, and me and my friend, you know how they had like, they went to this person who would speak absolute gibberish. I can't remember what their name was. And then there would just be like this random person and you had to pay them to translate what they said. And that's what I did. I translated. It was all fake. It was all fake. So they would just be saying random stuff. And I would say something, you know.
Cool.
Godly.
As you do, Evie, many of your pronouncements are godly. Right, do we have anything else we'd like to say about this episode?
I think it all happened very quickly at the end. I think Zero figured it out too quickly, and I know there were hints, but they were way too subtle.
Okay.
I felt like they really needed to be obvious hints.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Oh, did you notice there was four numbers on the key?
Yeah, on the key there were numbers. It was like 5, 3, 9. I think
it was 3, 5, 2, 5. I don't know whether that's important or not, but
can you tell we do escape rooms? Like, what does the key say? Keep that in your head.
Yeah. Is there any other points you'd like to make about this episode?
I'd like to say that I liked Murph's hat.
Yeah, Murph's hat was cool.
It's a pretty funky hat.
Was it Chubby?
It was a Chubby.
Yeah, I think it was,
It was a Chubby. What else? Rock Talk's just my fave.
Rock Talk is cool. Sarah, do you have thoughts? I see that you're clutching Twitter in front of you. We have more contributions.
So from the lovely Suki.
Suki, how you doing, Suki?
It says, a holodeck episode is usually a highlight of a season of any Star Trek show, and Prodigy continues the trend. So you two can have a conversation at some point. I loved Murph lip syncing to a song. The explanation about the interdimensional workings of a holodeck was definitely needed. Overall, a great episode.
Thank you, Suki. And hi, Andrea. Hi, Lindsay as well. How you doing? Woo-hoo. Woop woop. Okay.
How many lights you see? I asked how many lights you see.
So let's do lights then. Sarah, lights out of 5 for Ghost in the Machine.
3.5.
Can't do halves.
Can.
Okay.
Who is Evelyn? 4.7534.
Oh, shush. Thank you. Isabel?
4 lights.
I'm giving it a 3. Sorry.
Okay.
I feel like we've ended on a downer now.
We've got 2 more episodes to do. Yeah.
Oh, well, let's go and watch those then.
There we actually are, guys.
Might have a crisp sandwich first.
Nice. Well, with a crisp sandwich, we leave you and wish you a very merry New Year, I guess.
Yeah. It'll be closer to New Year when this goes out.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Toodaloo.
Live long and prosper. Bye.
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 Vice Admiral's Log. Stardate 61401.5. Error. Error. Cannot comply. No log recorded.
Hi, I'm Dr. Aaron, astrophysicist and science advisor for the Star Trek franchise, and this is the Science of Star Trek.
Hey, you always wanted to see the stars, am I right?
Did you know that our sun is actually a star, like the ones we see shining at night? Our star is mostly yellow, though don't look directly at it, and about halfway through its life of around 10 billion years. The life of a star is really cool. We start with a big cloud of gas, mostly hydrogen, the lightest gas. Some of the gas particles start bumping into each other, and as they do, they get heavier. They start to attract a whole bunch of gas particles. Now, if you rub your hands together really fast, you can feel your hands heat up. This is because of something called friction. As these gas particles all clump together, they start heating up from friction and get heavier and heavier. This stage is what we would call a protostar. Just like the name of the starship on Star Trek Prodigy, it's a star that is glowing hot from friction and a big ball of gas, but hasn't become an actual star quite yet. A star is born when the hydrogen in the middle of the ball gets all pushed together, fuses, and becomes helium. When this happens, energy is given off, and now we have a star. Through its life, a star will mostly burn through and fuse all of its hydrogen. When it runs out, it starts to expand and turn red as the helium fuses into carbon. This is what we call a red giant. During its life, a star is balanced between what we call radiation pressure, all the energy escaping the star and pushing out, and the gravity of the star trying to fall in on itself. It's like a perfect balloon. When a star finally runs out of fuel, there's nothing pushing out against the gravity anymore. For lighter stars like our sun, this just means the outer layers start to fall away, and we're left with a hot, glowing core called a white dwarf. For really heavy stars, though, the gravity is so high that the outside of the star falls into the middle. When the star can't take any more, those outer layers bounce off in a huge explosion called a supernova. Oh.
Incredible.
Absolutely thrilling.
Either way, now this star has gone through its life and has returned gas back to space, which can then clump together and form a brand new star. The ship that our intrepid crew is on has a special engine that actually stores a protostar, hence its name.
Protostar isn't just the name of the ship. The engine is a protostar.
So we're carrying around a baby star inside the
baby
ship?
Baby star?
This means that there is a dense clump of gas inside the ship that's glowing from its own heat and friction. When they want to use the protostar for the ship's engine, they push that cloud tighter together so it starts releasing more energy.
Something's happening.
Engaging proto warp.
Which they can then use, like a battery, to form a wormhole and travel really far, really fast. Even though scientists haven't discovered a protostar as small as the one on the ship, the idea of using a star's energy to power a ship is pretty cool.
Is this warp 4? This, my friend, is warp 9.97. Hold on to your butt, pal.
I'm Dr. Erin McDonald, bringing you all the science facts behind the science fiction in Star Trek.